Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Looky, Ma, I got me a radio show.
That sounds familiar. Who is that guy? He's good, good, good radio voice, that guy. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to be on the program. We're going to get straight to your phone calls. Let's start with Laura in Indianapolis. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hi there.
Hi. I had a question. I have a sister-in-law who is a Methodist minister, and I am the only Catholic on my side of the family. My whole family is not religious at all, except for my sister-in-law. And I was wondering, as a Catholic, do I have an obligation to try and convert her or, you know, open her eyes to the truths of the Catholic faith? How does I'm not really sure. She's new in our family, so I'm not really sure how, if I need to address that or not.
Yeah. My first question is, what kind of a relationship do you have with her?
It's pretty open. You know, they just got married in the past year, so I'm not super close with her. They live several states away as well, so we don't see them on a regular basis or anything, okay. But a couple of times a year we do get together.
Got it. Okay. Well, let's start with what St. Peter says in 1 Peter 3:15. He says, always be ready to give a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, but do it with gentleness and respect. Now, you'll notice that that says to always be prepared in your own way, as best you can, you know, according to your own time and temperament. But it doesn't say that you're obligated to do this. I think it's, we are obligated to be as prepared as we can be. So you need to be as prepared as you can be. So if it ever came up, you'd be in a position to share your faith and speak intelligently on that. But you're not told there that you must do this. I think rather that is the spirit of being Christian. And so as Jesus said to the apostles in the Great Commission at the end of Matthew's Gospel, Matthew 28, he says, go into the whole world and make disciples of all nations. So there we have this clarion call for everybody everywhere to hear about Jesus and this church that he established, the Catholic Church. And so obviously your sister-in-law will probably never meet the Bishop of Indianapolis, the successor of the apostles. She probably will never meet your pastor unless she attends Christmas Mass with you, but she'll see you. And so I think if you want to talk about this as a duty that all of us have as baptized believers, the duty is different for some than others. So the bishop has a more formal duty to evangelize. The priests have a more formal duty to evangelize and to teach people about the faith. You have, I would say, an informal duty, which means that in your own way, as best you can, as you're taking care of the duties you do have as wife and mother or whatever your duties are in life, when those opportunities arise to share the faith in a way that you can, I think the spirit of the law would say that you should do so if there's an opportunity. And yet you don't have a strict obligation to do so. So it's not as though you're committing a sin if, you know, at the 4th of July picnic that the family gets together for, you're not committing a sin if you don't evangelize your sister-in-law, but it can be very meritorious and even life-changing if you do. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Do you think she'd be receptive?
I'm not sure. You know, I really don't know. I think she's the main breadwinner in that household. And so I think that there would be a lot of, I'm not sure how to say it. I think there would be a lot of hesitation, at least on her part, just for the logistical things, you know, so she may come to know, she may come to believe it, but, you know, in the end, would she leave her job and find some other career path? I don't know.
Yeah. Only God knows, of course. I can tell you that I've met any number of people who have done just that, as amazing and as unexpectedly as it might be. There are people who do leave their jobs, and when they accept Jesus, when they become Catholic, in some cases they have a radical life transformation. In some cases they lose their jobs, you know, like a pastor, a Calvinist minister who becomes Catholic. That's not infrequent. There are a lot of them who become Catholic, and they lose their jobs because they can't continue doing that in the church where they were before. Sometimes in an effort to lay hold of that pearl of great price, people lose their marriages, sadly, or their children won't talk to them anymore. I can't believe you became a Catholic. How could you do that? So some amazing transformations do take place in the lives of people. Now, I'm not hoping that your sister-in-law would have that kind of upheaval in her own life, God forbid, but it sometimes happens. And so something short of that could easily happen, where maybe because of you and your kind effort to share the faith with her, if it catches and she winds up becoming Catholic, it could have life-changing implications, but hopefully in a positive way that don't lead to suffering. That's how it usually goes.
Okay, you've given me a lot of good things to think about. Thank you. I think I might send her your first Surprise by Truth book. I think is that the one that has a lot of Protestants with the minister, some of the ones who wanted to be ministers? Is that right? Okay. I think I have a copy of it, but I might get her own copy.
Oh, I think that would be a great choice. And the way to tell them apart is that the first Surprise by Truth, it now has a red cover. For many years it had a purple cover, but it's now red. But in any case, the first one, the subtitle is 11 Converts Give the Biblical and Historical Reasons for Becoming Catholic. So each volume has a different number of people whose stories are in it. So the first one is 11. The second one is 15. The third one, I'm forgetting now, Surprised by Truth 3. And then Surprised by Life, that's the fourth one, that has 10. So if you have the one that has 11 in the subtitle, that's the one I'm thinking of. That's the one you're thinking.
Yes, I do have that one. Yes, it definitely has a purple cover, so I must have an older version. But okay. Well, I will think on that and pray on that. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Laura. Thank you. And for what it's worth, my parting advice would be maybe you could text her a link to the show page, relevantradio.com, and just say, I'm sorry, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and just say, hey, there's this guy on the radio, interesting show, a lot of different topics that come up. You might enjoy it. And just download the app on your phone, and maybe, just maybe, she'll start listening to the program, and then I can help you help her. You never know. Thank you. Let's go to Rose now, waiting very patiently in Detroit. Rose, thank you so much for waiting, and welcome.
Hello?
Oh, boy, I hope. There we go. Hi, Rose.
Hi. Hi, Patrick. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just curious. I saw something on one of the local church's bulletins, and it said a Taza prayer or communion or community prayer that's happening. And I just didn't know. I tried looking up on Google, and I just figured I'd call you and see if this is something that Catholics do or or shouldn't do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I've always heard it pronounced Taizé, and although I've never attended one of the Taizé prayer services, I know many people who have. The background is ecumenical. So this started in France, I don't know, quite a long time ago, and it involved Catholic priests and Protestant ministers who would gather and pray together in an ecumenical setting. So it could be, and often was, let's say, in a Catholic church. But it was intentionally ecumenical. So, yeah, Catholics do that. And it was Catholics, along with Protestant ministers, who began it all those years ago. And so it's a form of prayer that is fundamentally, what's the word I just said, ecumenical. That's the main thing about it. But it has a certain structure. It has a certain way that it follows with songs in prayers and readings and things. So it's not something that you couldn't go to if you wanted to go to it and experience it and see what you think about it. But just be aware that you're going to be meditating on using song or a kind of repetitious song. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. You know the song that's sung sometimes, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom? Those are the words of the good thief mm-hmm. on the cross. Have you ever heard that song? Mm-hmm. It's kind of a very, okay, well, that's what it would be like. So it wouldn't necessarily be that phrase, but it would be something like that. And so there would be this continual chanting of this, for example, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And that would be sung continuously for a long time. And so there would be meditation, there would be prayers, but that would be one of the unique features of a Taizé prayer meeting, would be the way in which they're praying and the ecumenical okay. character to it. So that's what I think you could expect.
Okay, because when I Googled it, it said something like it, there's little, like you said, Protestant, and I just wasn't, I was like, oh no, I just... If I thought about it, and if I could go, I wasn't sure if I would be doing something wrong.
No, you wouldn't be doing anything wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, it may not be a prayer form that appeals to you. You're welcome, Rose. Didn't mean to interrupt you. It may not be a prayer form that appeals to you, and I suppose the only way you would know is if you went and tried it and saw what you thought. There are certain prayer forms that just don't appeal to me, and I find them more bothersome than anything else, but other people like them. So in a case like this, you have the freedom to experiment, to find out if there's a certain kind of prayer form that's beneficial to you. And as long as you keep in mind the ecumenical character, realizing that, you know, by virtue of the fact that you've got Catholics and Protestants praying together in a church, that's great. And there's a lot of good about that. But it doesn't erase the differences. It doesn't mean that, well, you know, there are many paths up the mountain and we're all really just the same, or we all really agree on the essentials. First of all, there is no list of essentials given in the Bible. But any time that we can find common ground with Protestants, that's a good thing, if you ask me. And so I would not in any way discourage you from experiencing the Taizé prayer service if that's what you'd like to do. Not that it's up to me to give you permission. I don't mean it like that, but that would be my advice. Thanks, Rose. How about Stephanie now in New Haven, Connecticut? Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, I am so excited to connect with you. I hope you can hear me okay.
Oh, thanks. Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. I had a comment and a question. So first, my comment. Today is the first ever pro-life march in Hartford, Connecticut. So I would really appreciate prayers from you and the wonderful listeners of Relevant Radio to keep this day and this intention in their prayers. And then a comment. I was chatting with a sonographer who I volunteer with for the Pregnancy Resource Center, and she had a great question, and I had no idea, and I wanted to bring it to you. What is a clear biblical description on the difference between Reiki and hands-on healing by the apostles? And that's my question.
Okay. Good question. Well, Reiki is of Japanese origin. It would fit within the bigger picture of New Age, holistic, alternative medicines and therapies. And the church does not accept Reiki as a valid practice. In fact, in a document that was issued by the church years ago, it's called Christ the Bearer of the Water of Life. It's available on the Vatican website. It's a treatise on, or a Catholic critique of, the problematic areas of the New Age movement. And Reiki is mentioned in that. And so I would say if you want to have a kind of a cursory explanation of it, I would read that, Christ the Bearer of the Water of Life. And if you type in that phrase, you'll be able to find it easily. Now, there's also a book that I have quoted before on the program, and I want to make sure, the author's name is Max Scully, but I want to make sure that I give the correct title. So let me see if I have it handy here. It is Yoga, Reiki, and Tai Chi, and it is an analysis or a critique of all three things in that order. yoga, Reiki, and Tai Chi. And it's I find this book a very calm and non-polemical explanation of the issues. And so if you wanted to get a book that's going to walk you through, you know, what are the specific reasons why Reiki would be problematic, not to mention the other two, that would be the book I would recommend. And in it, the author, Max Scully, he goes into not only the basic practices, but he also shows how, here's an example of where this conflicts with Catholic teaching or authentic Christian prayer, things of that nature. So if you want something that's going to give you a lot of detail, that's what I would suggest. And looks like maybe we lost our caller. I hope that's helpful to you. And Cyrus, if you can get a link to that book, that would be helpful for people to take a look at it. Let's go now to Michael in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Hi. So my question is a follow-up to one you answered for the woman whose sister is a Methodist pastor. Okay. So my question is, I'm divorced and I'm currently seeking an annulment through my church. But because that's still going on, what is my role to my wife as far as what do I still need to be doing, if anything, to be trying to get her to heaven since I am still married
well,
in the church?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, pray for her. That's probably at this point the only thing you can do. I mean, if the two of you are divorced, I assume you're probably not palsy-walsy, probably not talking very often, right? Yeah, so since you don't have that kind of ongoing personal contact with her, I would just pray for her every day. And that's very powerful. It's not as though you're just praying for her. So I would pray for her. And if you have intentions when you pray your rosary every day, if she's not already in those intentions, I would add her. And yeah, I mean, I think that's the single greatest thing you could do is pray for her.
Yeah, and I agree, absolutely. One of the thoughts I have, though, is that if I have knowledge of her doing things that are harmful to her soul, you know, possibly placing her in a state of mortal sin, do I have any obligation to her to do more? I listened to you daily, so I've given her, you know, the Dogma of Hell. I've given her
I bet she loved that.
I've given her all these books.
I'm not making light, but I could just imagine. What was the look on her face when you handed her the book on hell?
I actually put it in a bag of stuff that I gave her when we were swapping the kids. And so I had followed up on it, just knowing her, it might not be a good response. So, but is there anything more?
So are you guys, sorry to interrupt. Are you guys at odds with each other? Is it calm and quasi friendly, or is there a lot of friction between the two of you?
No, it's friendly. We get along. We don't talk much, but we do get along. No arguments. Okay. We don't really discuss anything. We just get along.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's better than a lot of people have it, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're hitting on all cylinders. It doesn't sound like there's anything that you could be doing and aren't. You're already praying for her and you're thoughtful enough to give her some reading material. But if you're asking me, do you have an obligation to tell her, let's say she goes out dancing and romancing and things like that? I mean, in a certain sense, you have as her husband still, at least the presumption is that your marriage is valid until it's shown to not be valid. And that's what you're going through with the annulment process. But it's not really an obligation that you can easily fulfill. And I don't think if you're asking for my opinion, it doesn't seem to me that you're in a position to be able to tell her, hey, you know, you shouldn't be out dancing and romancing. I mean, objectively, that's true because you're still married in the eyes of the church until the church deems that it wasn't a marriage. I mean, it was null from the beginning. That's what the likely outcome is. But how easily could you say that to her? And would she even hear it from you? And you know what I'm saying? In other words, it's almost a moot point insofar as she doesn't look to you anymore as somebody who has a right to tell her things like that. I'm guessing, but I'm assuming it's probably like that. Would that be a fair assumption?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me put it this way. As Nancy and I have watched our children grow into adulthood, and now have children of their own. There are things that some of my kids have done or decisions that they've made that I don't agree with. And in fact, I think, you know, this is really not something you should have done. This is something you should do. Now, if it's something that rises to the level where I feel an obligation that I need to say something, at least in my own conscience, so that I know that I can face God one day and say, I tried, you know, that's one thing. But a lot of times I just have to bite my lip and just not really say anything, because it's not my place to get into some aspects of their lives and meddle, if that's the right word. Right. Sometimes it's not meddling, it's necessary, but not always. And so that's a lesson I'm learning as an older father and whose children are now adults, and that is that I can't always do that. So there are times when the best thing I can do is be silent and pray for them and show them good example. And maybe that's where you are right now. I don't know.
Right. I think so. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that's helpful. I think I was kind of struggling with my own conscience. Like you said, should I be doing more, or you know, what more can I do? I'm very comfortable and confident that I'm doing a lot in my prayer and just kind of putting these things out there for her.
I think that's beautiful.
I appreciate it.
How many men or women, for that matter, have that same attitude toward an ex-spouse? Not many. So I admire you for being faithful in this way to pray for her, even though I'm sure it's painful. The whole thing is painful. The fact that you're still praying for her and seeking the best for her, that says a lot of good about you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. There's no chance, no hope for reconciliation? None at all?
I highly doubt it. I've kind of put it out there many, many times that I'm kind of here and waiting and still willing to work and all that stuff. Again, giving these books, and she's in another relationship that she...
I see. Well, we'll pray for her, and we'll certainly pray for you. And I mean that. We really will pray for you. Thank you. I'll be right back.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a new free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
At the intersection of faith and culture, the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm just waiting. Just waiting for the best part.
It's all the
Here
best
comes.
Part. Oh, I was wrong. That was the best part.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. You're never going to hear a show like this anywhere else, and you know that. Can I get an amen, Cyrus?
You can get an amen and an A-woman.
Yeah. Let me hear it.
Oh, you want to actually hear it.
Amen and A-woman.
All right. Okay. I want to turn to something serious. I saw this yesterday. It was last night, as a matter of fact. I saw this on Twitter. I'm just going to share it with you. So this is from Jeff Vickers on Twitter. He says, first off, I am okay. I was robbed at the Chevron in Boise. After my hand stopped trembling, I managed to call the sheriff. They were quick to respond and calmed me down. My money is gone. The police asked me if I knew who did it. I said yes. It was pup number 5. It wasn't that funny. It wasn't that funny, but it was funny. How much you pay at the pump recently, Cyrus? Probably $5 a gallon, something like that.
I just got gas yesterday, and it was over $60.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah, not ha-ha funny. Just kind of funny.
All right. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Christina in Chandler. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick comment and then a question.
Okay.
So my comment is for the woman who called in with a Methodist minister in-law. I'm a convert to the faith, so I was that in-law. And Surprised by Truth was one of those books that was instrumental to my conversion. So thank you for that.
Wonderful.
And
you're welcome.
And my comment is that I think the most effective way to have those conversations is to begin with relationship. I like that you commented about that. What is the relationship? And have those conversations in from a posture of understanding the Catholic faith, of having the in-law understand her Catholic faith. And then the book can be a response to that when someone asks for questions, because my in-laws were so patient with me. and it was relationship, and it was casual conversations for many years. And then those books became more natural in that conversation when they were offered. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to encourage her that. And then my question is, as a convert, you would probably understand, this being a question, but, before I became Catholic, we could pray to God, pray to Jesus. You know, it could be in our head, be inside our heart. But as for intercessory prayer, when we pray and we ask the saints for intercession, should it be out loud? This sounds kind of a silly question, but should it be asked audibly, or can we still be inside our head and inside our heart? Does the Holy Spirit sort of communicate that, or can they hear our thoughts? Where is the Catholic Church's understanding on that?
Excellent question. This is such a good question, because it gets to the nature of human beings and also the supernature of the saints in heaven, who are still human beings. They don't become angels. But as Jesus says, they become like the angels. We become like angels, but we don't become angels. So let me start there and just say, when you pray out loud, or if you pray out loud, it's not as though the saints in heaven can't hear you or won't know what you're saying unless you pray out loud with your mouth. The same is true for angels, and the same, of course, is true for God, because he knows everything. When we pray out loud, we're using our body to communicate our thoughts. Now, strictly speaking, in heaven, let's start with the angels. The angels are not corporeal. They don't have bodies, and their souls, as pure spirits, are not made for a body the way our souls are made for a body. So to be truly human, your body and soul, which is why we experience the world around us, and we learn the truths of the world around us through our bodies, through our senses. And when you think about it, human language is simply a series of symbols. So if I said the word lasagna to you, it's a symbol for the food that you've tasted, and you've seen it, and you probably have made it, so you know what lasagna is. And we just agree as English speakers that this word symbol that we say lasagna, that is a symbol of that actual reality. It's not the reality itself. But in heaven, the angels, they don't need to use language. They don't need symbols. They don't need writing, for example, because there too, writing is simply a symbol of a meaning. It's a symbol of a reality. And that puts something intermediate between the one communicating and the one who's being communicated to. So that's because we have bodies, therefore we have to communicate that way. Angels are above us in the created order, and they're not limited the way we are by needing symbols. So angels communicate directly to each other. They do speak to each other, but they don't use language. They open their minds and they reveal their thoughts to each other. So it's an immediate, instantaneous acquisition or apprehension of the thing itself, as opposed to a word symbol or a word symbol on a page. So when you're praying to the saints, they now share in that ability in heaven. So it's not necessary that you pray the rosary out loud. I mean, you can, and often it's a very good thing to do that, but if you pray the rosary silently in your head, God permits the saints in heaven to know what you're praying. It's not as though they can invade your secret thoughts. They can't. Not even the angels can do that. So your secret thoughts in your own mind, those are yours. But when you will, when you desire that, a saint in heaven or the Blessed Virgin Mary or your guardian angel hear your prayer, for them, it's not necessary that you speak it out loud, because if you open your mind to them, you give them this thought, you ask them for their prayers, by God's permission, they're able to know that. I realize that's a bit of a roundabout explanation, but I think without knowing the difference between this, because without knowing that, it becomes difficult to understand. Well, then how can they hear our prayers if we don't say them out loud? Well, we don't need to, because they have a higher level of communication than we do. And then, of course, when we get to heaven, we'll participate in that higher level of communication. And one little detail here, Christina, we won't in heaven, we won't cease to be corporeal creatures. In fact, when we receive our bodies back at the end of the world, we will enjoy the happiness of eternity bodily as well as spiritually. So that probably means, I'm not sure exactly how, but I'm sure it's going to involve wonderful food. And we will experience the joys of heaven with our bodies, whatever that may mean. And I think that will include singing and speaking and praising God with our glorified bodies, our mouths. It's hard to understand what it will be like, but you know, we won't cease to be human. We won't become angels. We will still have our human attributes and all that that entails.
Wow, that's great. Thank you so much. I really like the part about opening our mind, kind of allowing that prayer to go out and that communication to be open. So I appreciate that explanation. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Christina. Appreciate your patience with my long answer. Thank you for that. Why don't we go now to, Sublimity, Oregon. And talk to Martin. Do I have the name of the town right? Is it Sublimity?
Yes, it's Sublimity. Good morning, Patrick.
That's a great name.
It is. It's awesome. It's a great town. Good morning. So I'm the father of five children, ages 4 to 14, and my wife and I, we have eight godchildren about the same ages. One of our godchildren, who's 14, she has parents who have separated. So her father has fallen away from the Catholic faith. And he now has custody of our godchild over the weekends, and he's not taking her to Mass. My wife and I are concerned about the state of our godchild's soul, and we'd like to hear any suggestions you might have about how we might be able to help her and be good godparents for her.
Oh, that's admirable that you're seeking after that. Now, I want to make sure I understand, is her father or her mother or both, are they open to you doing this? Are they receptive to you wanting to, you know, kind of foster her faith? Is that something they're okay with?
So, well, her mother is a practicing Catholic, and my wife talked to her a little bit, like, you know, just saying, you know, do you think we could take her to Mass with us? And her mother was saying she didn't think that would be a good idea, but she didn't really get into the, like, why that wouldn't be a good idea. I'm guessing the dynamics of the relationship. I don't know the details.
Okay. And how old is the girl again?
She's 14.
Okay. So she has 4 years to go before she can decide for herself, at least from a legal standpoint. Well, maybe what you could do is just, kind of gently continue to let them know, I'm here, or we're here, we'd love to take her to Mass with us on Sunday. And in your own gentle diplomatic way, you could remind them, remember, you asked us to do this. So when you invited us to be godparents, you asked us to be in her life and help in her growth and knowledge of being Catholic. And we want to fulfill our promise to you and to her. So maybe that kind of gentle reminder would help thaw out any resistance on their part to it. Now, maybe it won't. I don't know. But if it does, and even if it doesn't, I would just continue to let it be known in your gentle way that you're there and you're willing to help. And that, of course, would extend to things like get her her own Bible. Get her a copy of some good Catholic books. Encourage her to listen to relevant radio. If she has a smartphone, 14-year-olds shouldn't have smartphones, but most of them do. If she has a smartphone, and if it's okay with her parents, because you're her godfather, or maybe it's something your wife could do, maybe your wife could text her a link to the Relevant Radio app. So if you go to relevantradio.com, where it says listen, that's one of the tabs, click that, and there's a page there for where you can download the Relevant Radio app, whether it's a Android or an iPhone. Now, I would be delicate here. I'd be very careful. And now that I'm thinking about it, you're her godfather, so you do have a kind of standing there, but because she's 14 and you're a grown man, it might be better if your wife were to text that to her, not you. That's something you'll just have to consider. But these are little things that you can do, and that can help her along. And as long as her parents don't slam the door and say, I forbid you to do this, I would keep doing it. Okay. And keep helping little by little, you know. I wouldn't overwhelm her, because you don't want to drive her away. But at the same time, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, that can be very advantageous over time.
It does seem like she has an interest in the faith. A couple of years back, she was serving at Mass and was interested in that. And she was going to a Catholic school until just recently. She aged out of the school she was at, and now she's at a private Christian school. So I'm mm-hmm. concerned that she's losing kind of that Catholic identity. But these are some great suggestions.
That's a real concern.
So these are some great suggestions for maybe how my wife and I can help encourage her to retain mm-hmm. that Catholic identity.
I would definitely do that. I mean, that's an important obligation. And so, as I say, I admire you for being attentive to it. Not all godparents are, you know, they don't really even necessarily know that that's an obligation. So one other thing is that you might have heard an earlier caller referencing a book called Surprised by Truth. In full disclosure, mm-hmm. I edited the book. But it has a wonderful track record of helping Catholics remain strong in their faith and kind of inoculating them through these stories of conversion. These are Protestants who became Catholic. It has a very good track record of inoculating Catholics against the lure of some of these errors within Protestantism, the Bible only, salvation by faith alone, once saved, always saved, things of that nature, and also the criticisms of Catholic teaching on things like Mary and the Eucharist, etc. And on the other side, it tells these powerful stories of people who used to be Protestant who became Catholic and why. So if at some point you were to give her a copy of that book, and you can pick up a used copy for peanuts online, I mean, I'm not trying to sell you a book. But you can get.
I think we already have at least one copy of it ourselves. So,
perfect. Yeah, just give her a copy of that book and inscribe it with a nice message from her godparents. And I really think that if she were to start reading the stories in that book, it would help inoculate her, so that even though she'll be in this school, she's going to know the answers to the kinds of things that she'll hear when she's there. So that would be another.
That's great. Yeah, thing. That's a great idea.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I can help.
Thank you. I think this gives some good ideas, so I appreciate it very much. Thank you, Patrick.
You got it, Martin. Thank you. A little overdue for a break, but here we are, and I'll be right back with your phone calls right after this.
Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
All right, moving and grooving here on the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. I want to go to Sacramento right now and talk to Emily, who's been waiting patiently. Good morning, Emily. Welcome. Hi, Emily.
What the hell?
All right. Emily, are you there? Because it doesn't sound
like
it.
Oh, my God, I'm here. Yes, sir. Hi.
Welcome aboard.
How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. What's on your mind?
So I was kind of just wanting to ask about the consecrations, because it looked like you were saying about Russia and Ukraine, you were going to do the mm-hmm. consecration together. I was kind of curious if you could add more, are you able to add more to the consecration, or is there a reason you're only able to do those two, or is there a limit on that?
Not exactly. I wouldn't put it that way. So you can pray for anyone. You can pray for, it's unlimited whom you can pray for. But the real issue, as I understand it, is that Our Lady back in 1917 in Fatima, and I'm sure you know the story, she said to Lucia, who became later Sister Lucia, that she should tell the Holy Father of that day to consecrate Russia by name to her Immaculate Heart. And she talked a lot about Russia and the problems that Russia would cause, up to and including the annihilation of nations. So my thinking, and you know, nobody consulted me, but my thinking is that that's what the consecration should be the consecration of Russia in this particular case. Now, obviously, I'm not the Pope. It's not my job or anything like that. And the Holy Father has composed the prayer that includes all of humanity, and in particular, Russia and Ukraine, or Ukraine and Russia. I forget which order it's in. It might be Russia and Ukraine. That's his prerogative. I mean, he can do this however he wants to do it. And it's not for me to second guess him. But, I mean, all I can say is that Our Lady requested that Russia be consecrated. And so if you wanted to include other things, you could, but it seems that it would be, it would perhaps dilute the focus of this particular consecration. And I'll give you a parallel example. Imagine that you're at church on Sunday, on Mother's Day, and the priest says, I'd like all the mothers to stand so that I can give them a special Mother's Day blessing. And I don't know if you're a mother, Kathy, but, you know, I'm sorry, not Kathy. I don't know if you're a mother, Emily, but maybe you have been at Mass on Mother's Day and you've heard like all the women stand who are mothers, I'm going to give you a blessing. Well, what if then he said, okay, now I want all the aunts to stand, all the aunties, maybe he'd say it that way. Okay, well, it's not Aunt Day, it's Mother's Day. And then he says, okay, now and I want all the sisters to stand for Mother's Day blessing. Well, it's not Sister's Day, it's Mother's Day, but whatever. And then what if it gets to the point where he has everybody standing. So like now everybody in the church is standing, along with you as a mother and all the other mothers, and he's giving a special Mother's Day blessing to everybody. It would dilute the thing. So that's why, as you're contemplating, you know, what other intentions can you add? You're certainly free to add any intentions you wish. The Holy Father is certainly free to add any intentions that he wishes, and that's his prerogative to do so. But from that standpoint, I would just say that the focus that Our Lady asked for is Russia. So as long as you keep the focus.
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm, go ahead. No, go ahead.
For like the consecration in general, was that in generally only for Russia? The consecration like created strictly Russia, or is that consecration in general, like something made and then placed on certain things, or is it like it was a Russia thing only?
Well, if I understand your question, I would put it this way. So Our Lady requested that the Holy Father consecrate Russia to her Immaculate Heart. So that's the core of that. Now, she didn't say that there couldn't be other things that were associated with this consecration. She just said, consecrate Russia to my Immaculate Heart. So as long as that's done, it seems that there would be latitude to include other things. That's how it looks to me. If you wanted to be a purist about it, you could say, well, the Holy Father should just consecrate Russia and nothing else, not humanity, not Ukraine, not anything else. There are some people who hold that view. So that would be maybe the best way I could explain it. One other thing, and thanks for the call, Emily, I appreciate it. One other thing to keep note of is that some people are talking about this consecration in terms of validity. Is it a valid consecration? Is it invalid? It has nothing to do with validity, certainly not in a sacramental sense. The real way to talk about it, if you ask me, is does this fulfill the request? Did Pope John Paul II fulfill the request of Our Lady to consecrate Russia to her Immaculate Heart when in 1986 he said he consecrates the whole world? And, you know, there's some speculation that maybe he included the word Russia privately. I don't know. Did it fulfill the request? And Sister Lucia several times testified, not in a courtroom, but she testified in interviews that as far as she was aware, that it did fulfill the request. But it's not a matter of validity, like a sacrament is either valid or invalid. This is not a question of validity. Thank you. Let's go to Kathy now in Chicago. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Patrick. I have my ex-husband, who's still very involved with our family and children, is deep into conspiracy theories in the government, in the media, in Hollywood. But his latest concern, and he's making it a full court press, is against the church and the Vatican. And he is constantly forwarding misinformation about how the church is perverted. And it really bothers me.
You say he's your ex-husband, is that right?
My ex-husband, yes. We're on very good terms. But it saddens me that he is now attacking the church. And I have asked him to consider who is the biggest adversary of the church. And I think that would have to be Satan. And what's your comment, or what's your thought about
is he Catholic?
Believing in these things about the church? He is. He's a Catholic. I'd say a fallen away but interested Catholic. So he doesn't participate, but he fancies himself religious.
I see. Well, it's deeply unfortunate that he holds that view, and there's a ready supply of websites and YouTube channels and blogs that purvey that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're rife with conspiracy theories, and, you know, maybe there's some truth to some of these theories. Maybe there's a little more truth than meets the eye. But one of the problems is that there's a whole cottage industry out there of people who make their living by getting people like your ex-husband all wound up. And that's how they get clicks, and that's how they get money, is by keeping people roiled on this issue. So the best thing for him, for his own mental health and his own spiritual hygiene, would be to disengage from those. So you are what you eat. So the more of that he consumes, the more like that he's going to become. What can you do? I would just say, hey, knock it off. You know, stop sending me this stuff. If you want to believe it, that's fine. I wish you wouldn't. But if you want to believe it, keep it to yourself, because I don't like it and I don't want it. And you have the standing to tell him that. And if he doesn't do it, I mean, if he doesn't comply, then you could just simply delete the email. I do that all the time. Just delete the email. You know, if you know this is something that is going to be an attack or something, just delete it. You don't even have to read it, much less respond to it. So I wish it weren't the case, but that's what I'd suggest, Kathy. Thank you. Let's quickly, if we can, get to Marilyn in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm going to try to make this quick. A couple is divorced.
We'll have to, because we only have a couple minutes.
Yeah, I know. A couple is divorced, okay, for quite a few years. The husband applied for an annulment, was denied, appeal denied, okay. So he is still married, okay, in the eyes of the church. He was told by a priest that even just having a girlfriend is adultery. Now, I don't know what their life in, you know, that what their life is like, what they're doing, but let's just say they are truly friends and nothing more. Okay.
Yeah.
It's
not adultery in a strict sense if they're not having sexual relations. It could be adultery in a looser sense if it's a romantic relationship that involves, you know, romantic physical contact. That could be considered adultery in a broader sense. But if she's just a friend and there is no romantic physical activity going on, then no, that doesn't rise to the level of adultery. But the fact is, he's still married. So just as I am not free to have certainly not free to have a romantic relationship or a physical relationship with a woman other than my wife, and he's not either, it's foolish to cultivate a deep personal friendship with a woman who's not your wife if you're married, because human beings are weak, and you know, the heart often leads the body into sin because of things like, quote unquote, I love this person. So I guess that's my best answer I can give you in short order, Marilyn. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, And I look forward to being again with you tomorrow, same Pat time, same Pat channel. Please pray for me. I'll pray for you. God bless you.
Forever dare you. No!